another current coach at the University of Iowa, the leader and head man of tight end U, Abdul Hodge, joins the show. But he's not just the coach of the tight ends and fullbacks. He is a legendary Hawkeye himself. He wore number 52. He was a bad man in the early 2000s. We talk about that, what it was like getting into coaching, and a whole lot more. Please enjoy Abdul Hodge. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. And today, Sunday, July 16th, we're doing a little two-for-one action. Just recorded with Tristan. I'm sure you guys probably heard that, or maybe you haven't heard that yet. If not, surprise. And now we get the pleasure of talking to a guy who I would assume that most of us have been a fan of for a very long time. Grant grew up in Denver, but he's an Iowa kid at heart. And Kluver and I grew up in the state of Iowa. Kevin, just across the border, he really wishes he was from Iowa. We'll never fully accept him, but he's like half an Iowan. But we were big fans of this particular individual. I remember one day, maybe 2004, a young Drake Kulik was in Hillcrest dorm, and one of the scariest dreadheaded individuals I've ever laid my 10-year-old eyes on was walking around there as a camp counselor. This is a full circle moment for me because I've been a fan for so long. Coach Abdul Hodge, welcome to the podcast, and thank you very much for being here.
Oh, man. Appreciate that intro, Drake, and I appreciate you guys having me on and look forward to it.
You said before we hopped on the recording that you always have to appreciate a large trapped individual, which is what Drake was happy that you gave him that compliment.
I actually met Coach Hodge for the first time. I don't know if you remember this, Coach. I broke my leg in the game that you were the captain for. 2016 on the first play of the game.
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah. But in Coach Hodge's pregame, would it have been on Thursday that week, the honorary captain comes in and gives a talk to the team. And as we were walking out, I shook Coach Hodge's hand, said, thank you very much for the meeting, grabbed me by the shoulder, and he said, you got some really big traps. And that was one of the best compliments I've ever gotten in my life. So, Coach, that one's going to stick with me.
Hey, you've been getting those shrugs in, man. I appreciate those extra shrugs.
Yeah,
Drake did more neck work than any teammate we ever had. So
had to 23B, man. Coach Hodge knows all about 23B.
23B, fullback linebackers, man. We got to go have it. We got to go get at each other. So you got to have them traps. You got to have that neck buckled up. You got to have those lats ready, and you got to be coming with it.
Well, Coach, there was a couple guys played next to each other that used to have some traps, let me tell you. And they were the heroes of our generation, and their names were Chad Greenway and Abdul Hodge. And I cried tears of joy watching you guys play football for the Iowa Hawkeyes when I was little. The fact that we got to live out our dream in the black and gold as well.
Coach, I was at the Outback Bowl sitting on the rail when Chad was not offsides.
that's awesome, man. Nah, you know what? We were just lucky to be part of like the Iowa football program at a great time, you know. So in 2001, December 2000, so it was class of 2001. In December of 2000, I think we came on a visit. It was me, Chad Greenway, Matt Roth, Brian Ferentz, Brad Banks, Mike Follett. There was a ton of guys.
Jesus. Wow, what a class, man.
That's some dudes right there.
It was awesome. One of the things I remember was, so the seeing like Brett Bielema was my coach at the time, and I played Will Backard. I was maybe 195 pounds, right, coming out of high school. And Coach Bielema looks at me, he said, Abdul, you're Will Backard. you see that guy right there? He points at Matt Roth. He's like, that's a Big Ten Mike. he was like 240 pounds, man, Reebok All-American. But just to be able to be on a visit with those guys and start to build that relationship, to me was awesome. And then next thing you know, we were part of that 2001 class. So
that was, sounds like a decent class to me.
Yeah, we had some guys that came in and handled their business and stuck together and you know, went on to compete and won a lot of football games.
Do you remember anything specific about that visit? What you guys did? Where they took you?
Well, yeah. So Benny Sapp, right? So Benny Sapp was a guy. He was a cornerback that played at Iowa. He was from my high school, Bort Addison High School in Lotto Lakes, Florida.
Okay.
And I'm going to share this story, but sometimes I try not to because it could be taken the wrong way. But so you get five visits, yep. Right? You get five visits. And the first two visits, I know I'm going to play around with. So I go to Auburn, right? I go to Auburn within my first visit because David Walker, a teammate of mine at the time that later on ended up transferring to Iowa, he wanted to take a visit to Auburn. Then I said, okay, well, the next visit – I'm going to go to Iowa because I'm going to hang out with Sapp. Like, me and Sapp went to school in middle school, yeah. Went to the high school, and Sapp was having a great career as a freshman corner at Iowa. Now, in my mind, I'm not going to Iowa, right? Not have won, I think, three games the year before or whatever. But I know I'm going to go out there, hang out with Sapp. We're going to have a great time. And then the next three visits, I was going to really – hone in and take this recruiting process much serious. But
these first two ones, you had no interest in the actual school. You're just going to visit some buddies.
I'm just going to feel it out. You get five visits. I'm gonna go fill out the first two. I'm gonna go to Auburn. You know, Big Dave want to take a visit to Auburn, and then I'm gonna go out here and hang out with Benny Sapp, man, and we'll go from there. Now, when I got to Iowa City, I had no clue. Right, I love the people. We went to a basketball game. Like, people literally knew your name. And then you start to meet the guys on the team. Like, I met Bob Sanders. I met Fred Russell. I think we went to hung out with Kevin Casper, Khalil Hill.
Asp.
Like, you met some of those guys. Like,
that's some name dropping right there.
Yeah, so you start to meet a lot of the guys on the team, and you just fall in love with it. And then you go through your visit. You meet with the coaches. You meet with Norm Parker. You meet Phil Parker, Ron Aiken. You know, we ate at with the Lone Star Steakhouse. Remember that?
Yeah.
The steakhouse and all of the coaches and their wives and their families was there. So you got that sort of that family feel. And
what did Lone Star Steakhouse turn into, Coach?
It's that Taboulou or whatever, right? Isn't it that I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure the name of it.
Okay,
right now.
Because Lone Star wasn't there when we were there.
There's still Lone Star here. Older. What are you talking about?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd never even seen that.
Right down the Corville Strip.
Yeah, it's by the mall. Yeah.
I'll be damned. I missed that one. Continue. My apologies.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So, and then we went, you know, you meet with Coach Ferentz. You go to Coach Ferentz's house. You meet his son, Brian. My point is the people is what really drew me to Iowa, drew me to Iowa.
At what point during your visit are you like, I got to start taking this seriously now?
No, the minute you land – you start to have a great feeling like this is different. This is not what I expected. Because coming from South Florida, you taking a visit to Iowa, what are you thinking?
You're thinking about, sorry about that.
You're thinking about, you're thinking about like cornfields. Like, that's all you know. You
snow.
Know, you're thinking about the snow. But the minute you drive into Iowa City, you just start to see how the sort of the university and the community and the town are all like connected. And then you go into Pentecost area, you go to downtown area, you go to university, you see the football program. And the crazy part about it, it wasn't like flashy, right? So you go from a visit to Auburn, which they picking you up in private jets, they laying out the red carpet. You go into a football game where Georgia is playing Auburn, and Rudy Johnson is the running back. So that's a huge game to attend, right? And then you go to Iowa City where you don't attend a game. You go to a basketball game. But really the people, you know, when you start to see the people, when you walk in that weight room, like you walk in that Jacobson building and you see the size of that weight room and you just see that music blasting and dudes are working out, and Bob comes off with a cutoff t-shirt with his traps hanging, and then you meet some of the young guys on the team, you like, hold on, man, this thing is a little different here. And then you start to dive in it a little bit, ask a little bit more questions, and you say, man, I can start seeing myself here, you know, and it kind of went from there. So yeah, it was a great visit, met a lot of great people, and made a great
where decision. Else did you go?
That was it. Once I came to Iowa, I shut it down.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Loved it that much. Golly.
I loved it that
That's
much.
Crazy, but that's
for me, it was an easy choice. I grew up 40 minutes down the road from Iowa City. So like
you also no didn't brain. Have you also didn't have the options. You couldn't
right,
fill
but
five
you can walk on anywhere, right?
Yeah, like, sure.
But dang, loved Iowa City that much.
Yeah, you know, I've always prided myself in being a people person and want to be around really great people. And once you start this, like, it's not about the facilities, it's not about the X's and O's. You know, the thing that I was looking for is I wanted to get developed, right? So you go to a place that prides itself in development and have a really great developmental process. Right. And then you start to hear the stories about the Dallas Clarks of the world. And then the other thing, too, guys from my area were doing really well. Fred Barr, Colin Cole, mm-hmm. You know, those guys was guys that we looked up to here in South Florida that went to Iowa and had success. Benny Sapp was playing as a true freshman. So when you start to see guys from your area go to the Big Ten and go to certain schools in the Big Ten and have success, you know, that plays on you as well. And then the other thing, you know, in terms of the ability to possibly get on the field early, I thought when I looked at the depth chart, when I talked to the coaches, you know, that opportunity, if I came in and worked my butt off, would have been there. And when I say playing early, like that's my redshirt sophomore year, which is 3 years out of high school. You know, you tell a kid right now, you're not going to play till 3 years out of high school, they think you're crazy.
Oh, yeah. They're already in the portal.
What's that?
You tell them that, they're already in the portal.
100%. And sometimes you have to share that story with them. Like, listen, man, I started for 3 years, my redshirt sophomore year, but that's 3 years out of high school. Man, you was in prom 6 months ago.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you looked across rosters across the country, how many 3-year starters do you think there are, like, just on a typical roster? It's like not common, in my opinion,
not as much as it used to be.
It's not common, especially at the higher you go, because it's a competitive field,
right?
Competitive space, and there's a lot that it takes before a college coach put you on the field. There's a lot to know. I think the biggest jump, and I tell parents and student athletes this, like going from high school to college is a huge jump. Like that's a huge gap. Like most guys aren't ready to play collegiate football. They're mm-hmm. just not. Now, if you compare the college to the NFL, not as bigger gap, because obviously you have a lot of programs that are designed and structured and built with guys that play at NFL level, you know, but you just have to, you know, put things in a proper perspective. Everybody has a different journey, and you kind of got to worry about yourself in terms and not look to the left and look to the right. And just keep working your butt off. And if you got to play early, you got to play early. Some guys wait to their last year, their senior year, and they're pop. Everyone is at a different place on the spectrum when it comes to development.
Describe your first couple of years. You know, you weren't starting on the defense. Did you get some time in on special teams? What was your first couple of years like on the program?
So first year we get into the program, everyone in our class redshirted except Matt Roth.
And he's just always been the biggest freak, huh?
He's so different. Yeah.
Yeah, that dude was running down on kickoff, the R5 blasting dude, our freshman year. Blowing up old school wedges, you know?
Oh, man. I bet. Oh, man.
He loved it.
RIP to the wedge.
Is he the craziest dude that you played with?
We've heard stories about Matt Roth 20 years later. So
let's put it like this. Matt's the real deal.
No. All right.
We got to get him on.
It's legit.
Oh.
He's a real deal. But to ask you a question, my first year, like I said, I got to campus. My visit, I stepped on the scale, I was 195 with everything on. And then I got to campus that in June or July at about 2:05.
Okay.
So I knew in order for me to like develop as a Big Ten linebacker, like I needed that weight room. I needed the nutrition. I needed the information. So redshirted. And what I tell people is when you redshirt, just think about it. 2001, I was my redsh- 2001, I redshirted. So you competed again. And then in 2002, we're playing, I'm pretty much playing special teams, right? So I have an opportunity to play kickoff, kickoff return, punt return. Loving it, right? Maybe a sub package. They put Raid on the field. I may get a few reps versus like a Purdue five wide, Northwestern mm-hmm. a five wide, you know, team. But rather than that, my role is to be run out, you know, be a special teams guy. But in 2002, when you think about it, right, think about that offensive line in 2002. You got the center, right, was Bruce Nelson, which he was a third-round pick. You have the guard. One of the guards is Eric Steinbach. That's your second-round pick, played in the league with the Cleveland Browns. You know, the tackle is Robert Gallery, second over. You got Alonzo
Duds.
Dallas Clark. You got David Porter. You got Ben Sobieski, who was a reserve at the time, who was a fourth-round pick. In the backfield in 2001, you got Ladell Betts. In 2002, you got the Freddie Russells of the world. You know, you got the most. So when you look at it, and I tell guys, in 2002, competing against those guys on scout team every single day, right? So you're competing against some of the best offensive line, not only in the country, the best group offensive line, arguably, together at the University of Iowa. So you follow that up, right? And then a guy that I'm playing behind my redshirt freshman year is Fred Barr. Right. So one thing about Fred Barr is he was a student of the game. Like that dude can make all the checks. He's going to study the film. So you learning and picking up, like when you're thinking about just how to learn from guys and watching guys, just the social learning theory and all of this. And then you fast forward a year later in 2003. And here's where I'm going with this. I'm a starter my redshirt sophomore year. Next to me is Chad Greenway. As we're both our redshirt sophomores. And we both go on to that year to like be all Big Ten and all this stuff, whatever, all that kind of stuff. But what I tell people is really that was in the works from 2 years before, from grinding on those scout teams, playing against the best guys in 2002. So when you did, you know, in 2003, step on the field as a starter, oh man, you was prep, right? Because you had to run like hell to get away from Bruce Nelson. You know, if Eric Steinbach got his hands on you, you might as well take a knee because you was not getting off that block unless you really came with it, you know. So those guys help you, iron sharpens iron. They help you get better. And it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, when you strap it up for the first time in a game versus Northwestern or Purdue, it's like they ain't got nothing like you were going against scout team last year. That's like it's easy now.
Yeah, you're licking your chops because you're ready. Because how many offensive lines have a Robert Gallery on? How many offensive lines have a Eric Steinbach?
I was just going to say, dude, Robert Gallery coming down to the second level. I would be so scared. He was so big. So when he comes back to like events, I'm sure you've seen him plenty of times since. He's lost all that weight. He's still a scary dude. And he's
kind of looks like the Undertaker.
He looks like the Undertaker. He's 6'8". He's tatted to the fingertips, and he's like 120 pounds less than he used to be. It's he was a scary dude. I used to have this this trading card, a jersey trading card of Robert Gallery. It was my prized possession in like first grade. Oh my god,
sold it, huh?
I got lost somewhere in the move when my parents moved to Ankeny. Yeah, that's you don't see many lines like that. That is nuts. Do you remember any welcome to the Big Ten moments on that scout team of like you got your bell rung and you went back to the dorm that day and you were like, shit, I don't know if this is for me.
Man, and blocks, you know, so the way our practices are structured.
Yeah.
You know, you have that run indie, you know, the defense will be doing tackling circuit. Offense to be, you know, probably doing ball security. Then you get into your run indy, and then you get into your blocks, you know, your blocks drill. And to me, that's Imano, man. That's one-on-one. Like, you can't hide. So when you get into those blocks drill, man, it's still a physical game, and that's a physical period in the practice.
Yeah.
And then you go from blocks to 9-on-7. So you go from run indie to blocks to 9-on-7. I mean, that's a physical practice in just the first half of the practice. So if you're not about that,
it's such a meat grinder. Like, I'm just sitting here reminiscing on it. Like, it really is a shitty 20-minute, 30-minute period of your day.
Nah, man, it's the worst. Even when we started adding all four special teams before that on our Wednesday practices, like, that was a tough 45 minutes right there, boys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you mentioned blocks and 9-on-7. I remember you came back and talked to the linebacker crew one time before you got back into coaching, and I'll never forget this, is you judge all linebackers by the way they take on the B play.
Oh, 100%. Because at the end of the day, as a backer or as a fullback, like, you don't play those positions, in my opinion, unless you can play fast and physical, and unless you love to hit, right? So those are the plays that you can kind of isolate guys and see what type of player are there. Because you can pick the guys up and let them run around and make tackles. But, you know, I was in the Big Ten when them dudes had 250 to 260-pound fullbacks.
We had one too. His name was Brady Ross, and he was so, so good.
Yeah. So to ask you a question, now Brady, I've seen a few clips from Brady, man. We would have had to bang a little bit in practice, but, man, I would have had to take some ibuprofen or something
after. For sure, dude. Yeah.
He was built like he came out like a bowling ball.
Built like a refrigerator, dude.
Yeah.
He wakes up hoping that they run the B play. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that guy did, for sure. Yeah, man, that's –
but a lot of teams ain't running the B play anymore, right? There's not a whole lot of fullbacks out in there, and a lot of college schemes out there. More.
Yeah, the game has changed a little bit, but it's still the same, man. It's like if you don't have, let's say you don't have the B play, but you're still gonna have to go down and take on blockers. You know, I just remember Norm Parker, at least from a defensive perspective, saying, Abdul, at the end of the day, like, on defense, you're going to have to get off blocks, run to the football and tackle, right? So maybe you're not taking on a fullback, but maybe you're the Mike backer and it's on cover guard and you got to go down and stroke that guy. You got to go and really, really deal with that blocker. You know, maybe you're the offensive guard or you're the tight end. You know, you're the tight end. You may be sealing back on a play. There's an end that's his ass is up in the air and he's licking his chops and he's coming out on that line of scrimmage. So, at the end of the day, you're going to have to block someone, you know, or you're going to have to go hit someone, or you're going to have to get off a block. And offensively, you know, not on my offense, and when you really look at it, you're either a receiver or you're a blocker, right? You're either receiving a football or you're blocking for someone. And at the end of the day, the football is still a violent game for violent people. And I hate to say it that way, but it still is. I think football is – the game of football, and I tell parents this, is the most safest it's ever been, right? Where we're teaching to use leverage, to use your pads, to get the knee in the crotch, the head out, use your hands. There's no tour days. There's a lot of things that's been modified within the game. And I tell people that football today is the safest the sport has ever been, but it's still a physical game.
It's a collision sport. It still is, yeah. Like, I'm sure, like, it's no different today than it was when we were there. Like, when that blocks drill is going on, you hear it all the way across the field. Like, I don't know what you fullbacks do during blocks drill, but I'm sure you guys heard the pads popping, you know?
I did blocks drill for a little while. Decent little while.
Oh, yeah. The fullbacks.
Now, you were a linebacker for
a while. I was a linebacker for a year and some change. Wasn't a good one, but I was one.
So to ask you a question, Kevin, I just feel like as a player or whoever, you just got to take pride in something. And for me, that's what I took pride in, man.
I
took pride in going down and competing against, you know, those fullbacks and those guys, man, the Drakes of the world, you know, the Rosses of the world.
No one was ever going to say that Abdul Hodge was afraid of contact.
I try not to be, man.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the stats here, and my body hurts just thinking about it.
Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the food guru, here to talk about Gray's Gourmet To Go. At Gray's Gourmet To Go, we are madly and passionately in love with three things: chicken lips, pizza, and great food to go. Chicken lips are the most beloved food in Iowa City. And if you don't know what a chicken lip is, you're really missing out. Our second passion is pizza. We're hell-bent on making great pizza. Yeah, you can get cheap pizza anywhere. But if you're a real pizza aficionado, you gotta try our meatball pizza. It's made with a natural starter. And like sourdough bread, it's soft and crispy and light as air. And the third thing that we're wildly and passionately in love with is great food to go. We believe you want to feed your family something great at home, but you're too busy with life to stop and cook. That's why we built Gray's Gourmet To Go. So the next time you need to feed the gang and you don't feel like cooking, just come to graysgourmettogo.com.
Coach, you had 141 tackles in your first year as a starter. Somehow only had 116 in 2004, and then set a record with 158 in 2005.
That's getting to the football.
I mean, you're finding the football a lot. What did you feel like after games, man?
Well, you definitely feel it, obviously, but you know, you guys have been through the process, man. You know, most of that work is being put into the weight room, right? Like, yeah, to get ready for a 12 game season in a Big Ten, like, you have to, like, from minute that bowl game is over, you take a few weeks off or whatever, but you mentally and physically start getting prepared for that season. So to me, the way we approach that weight room, just pounding those weights and getting stronger, you know, upper body, lower body, core, you know, getting more explosive, like physically and mentally, you got to get yourself ready for that type of game.
Do you remember any guys who specifically stuck out to you as when you were a young guy in the weight room, where you were like, "That's how you do it. Like that's the guy." You know,
man. Yeah, I think Eric Steinbach. That dude was a weight room monster. You know, the way you see those guys attack the weight room. And what I loved about that group of offensive linemen in 2002, like, they were all nice guys off the field, man. But then they'll get on the field, and they'll do some things to you, make you question how good of friends those guys are. Dirty dudes, man. Like Steinbach, that dude is different. Like Robert, you see him, he's nice, tatted up, he's soft spoken. But that dude get on the field, he got that helmet with the bar. He's gonna try to put you to sleep when you come off that ball. You know, but you just see the way guys like Freddie Russell, you know, 5'8", killing it in the weight room, squat rack, Jamel Lewis jumping out the gym, throwing up 300-something pounds, hand cleaning, Ed Miles, like, that dude's still around. That dude still look like he can get after it. That guy was a freak in that weight room. So you saw some of our best players, right, on a football field really bust their butt in that weight room, and that's kind of what you saw and what you wanted to do.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, though. I don't want you to cut yourself short. I want to say that even during our time, you had one of the records up on that weight room board.
Man, I had the okay, so here's the story. I had the bench press record. I don't know what it was. Maybe been 420, 425, I don't know. But it was for the inside backers. Mm-hmm. And Ed Miles moved from Leo to Will Backer, and it was over after that. That dude threw up 330, 340. It's 440 or something like that, and it was over. So
I crushed by the position.
Insane.
Whatever it was, it did not last long.
It's actually kind of funny because I was at safety, and Brandon Snyder and Jake Gervais were hand cleaning out of the freaking room. I get moved to Leo, and then the next time we test, I break the Leo record because it was a smaller record.
It happens that way. But to answer your question, that I think if you handle your business in the off season physically and mentally, it'll help you when you go through this. Of course, you're going to be sore. Of course, you're going to be achy. But to me, you can minimize that as much as possible by handling your business in the weight room with your nutrition and your sleep.
It says here you had night. I mean, the Hawks are like Hawks in the Outback Bowl, which I think its name has changed, but it's like hand in hand. We've been there like 100 times over the last 20 years.
It's a great bowl game, though. Let's just call a spade a spade.
Well, Coach here set a bowl record with 19 tackles in the Outback Bowl that he played in. So, I mean, you had to feel it after that one. Tell me about, and maybe Chad would say so. What was it like playing next to Greenway? And
because Greenway was extremely complimentary of you.
Oh yeah.
First of all, I would say this, right? What doesn't get highlighted as much with Chad is Chad was from Mount Vernon, South Dakota. I think it was 8-man, 9-man football. He was a quarterback, played safety, very good basketball player, triple jump, long jump.
Mayor of the town.
So when he got to Iowa, he was just an athlete, right? You really didn't know what position he was going to fall into or where he was going to develop at. But obviously he found a home at linebacker. And I could tell you when he came in, the guy that he left, who he developed to be was totally different, man. Totally different. So that in order to get to where he has gotten and to be a first round pick, all Big Ten player, that guy had to put in a ton of work, and he did. And what people don't, kind of forget is he tore his ACL in college. So he had to work back from that as well, too, and then did it again his first year in the NFL. So what I tell people about Greenway, man, that dude never gives up. That dude is a hard worker. Obviously, coming from Mount Vernon, his family, the farm, like, the dude's up early getting it in, right? So he came there with a great work ethic. He came there in a position room where he didn't really know much about because he was an athlete, play safety and quarterback. So now he's trying to, develop to be a Big Ten linebacker. So I think he did a great job. That dude is probably the best overall athlete I've played with. He pushed me, right? Because that dude is going to run into football every single play. And he doesn't get tired. Like, find me a clip with Chad Greenway bending over after a play. Like, that
sounds like. Sounds like Jack Campbell.
Exactly. He doesn't get tired. So when you're playing with a guy like that and you're competing with a guy like that, because obviously we compete in who can get the football faster. Like
He said that in our interview with him. He said that there were times where you guys were just out there having fun. Who could get the tackle first?
Oh, 100%. And it started in practice. Like when we run to the football, who can tag them off fast? Who can thud them up the quickest? Sideline to sideline. So you kind of pushed each other, challenged each other, but at the same time, loved on each other because you wanted to see the best for the guy that you was lining up against. And guys like that, to me, it made my job as a player and a student athlete that much more fun and easy. Because when you got Bob Sanders, that's your strong safety. You got Chad Greenway to the left or right of you, right? You got Matt Roth ahead of you. You got guys like D-Rob. And Babineau, and I can name a
Grant. God, you guys were stacked. Oh my God.
All these dudes. Them dudes. Now you talk about, go back. You mentioned, so what I'll say is those guys give you the confidence to just go out and play because if you made a mistake, like I remember slipping a block or taking my shot, but I would say slipping a block. But I took my shot versus we was playing Michigan at home. They ran.
Tried to go back door on the block or something.
Yeah, I went back door on it. I knew I was trying to cheat. Just run, take my shot, whatever. But I felt confident taking my shot because I know the strong safety was Bob Sanders, and if he was whatever I did, he was gonna make me right, right. And the same thing with Chad. Like if I'm gonna take my shot, I know Chad gonna back me up, right. So if there's a perimeter play. I know that dude is going to go from the boundary, and he'll run that dude down the opposite sideline. So it allowed you to go out and play with confidence, but to really play fast. Now you mentioned some stats, right? You mentioned in 2000 and what's the number in 2003?
It was 141,
right? And then and the next year it went down to 116.
Yep.
Okay, so and that was in 2004, right?
Yes.
So think about 2004. That was the easiest season. You got You got Matt Rolfe up front. You got Tyler Lukey. You got D-Rob. You got Babineau, right? So those guys.
You had dudes stealing tackles from you.
Oh, them dudes was – it was – them dudes was handling their business. And that's how it should be, right? Yeah. That's how it should be. So those guys up there, them guys was fun to play with, man. They made your job a lot easier. Obviously, if you're playing linebacker or you playing in the back end, everything for us starts up front. So we're not going to have great days. We're not going to be productive. We're not going to have a great defense if we don't have four guys up front and that's going to work. You know, we had a Leo Backer and Grant Steen that was just a selfless guy. You know, you're not going to get a lot of credit. You're going to have to spill a lot of things outside. And here's come Chad and the Mike Backer that's going to scrape over the top and make the play. But that's your job. So then you may have a play where you may have to fit it up and do your job and get the ball outside. So you just got 11 guys. And when you get 11 guys on the field just playing for each other and playing within a system, because it is a system, right? And playing within a system, that great things happen.
Do you see?
Go ahead.
I have one more question. Now that you coach on the opposite side of the ball and you go up against this Iowa defense 20 years later, do you see similarities from your defenses back in the early 2000s?
The same defense.
It's the same defense, bro.
I know. I understand same defense, but with the way that these guys play, we talk a lot on this show about how kids have gotten soft these days sometimes, and how the offensive side of the ball has changed a lot, right? With opening it up, a lot more passing. But do you ever have like a flashback in practice where you're like, damn, that sure looks like 2004 right there?
Yeah. So structurally, and I've heard Seth Wallace talk about this and saying how throughout the years, you know, since from 1999 up until last year, you can see those same pictures, right? In terms of how our guys are aligning defensively. And how we're structured defensively. But you can also say the same thing offensively. You know, we're still in 907, Drake. Mm-hmm. We're still going to open up with regular 0-1, and we're going to run some of the B plays and that type of stuff. So you go back when you was a freshman, and you can see that it's like, man, we've been doing this thing for a long time. And you kind of just know how the chips are going to fall, how the dominoes are going to fall on both sides of the ball, especially me being on the offense side of the ball now. But when it really comes down to it, it's still football. Yeah. I don't care if you spread it out, go five wide, you still on defense, you still going to have to get off a block, run to the football and tackle. Offense, you still going to have to block someone, secure the football, make someone miss, and advance the ball and score, right? So – And the more and more you peel back this tape and you start to look at what we're doing and what other guys are doing, it's still the same, right? What our wins are going to come down to? Defensively, you got to eliminate explosives 25 yards or more, right? When we eliminate explosives, we got a chance to win the game. When we take the ball away and get the ball back for the offense, we're going to be in great shape. Offensively, you know, when we eliminate turnovers, when we take care of the football, when we create explosives, right, that's what the game is going to come down to, time management, minimizing their possession, get more possessions for ourselves, and obviously we're not going to forget about special teams.
Spoken like a man who's sat in a lot of team meetings under Coach Ferentz and Coach Parker.
I was just going to say, this guy sounds like he could coach some football, man. Tell you what.
But
let me ask this, Kev. Hold on. So if everything is – the same, and there's a lot of smart football coaches all around the country, why is Iowa's defense notoriously so good?
Okay. So a few reasons why. One is when you look at the guy, when you look at the structure of Iowa defense, right? The 4-3, now the 4-2-5, because there's some things that has adjusted a little bit or have been modified. Right, whether that from Norm Parker, the defensive coordinator that instilled that defense, a lot of those same principles, a lot of those same structure, a lot of the same philosophies, and the way we defend offenses, the way we play defense, have not changed. Mm-hmm. Like, you know this from looking at when you at the warmups, what are those guys going to be doing? Tackle circuit, right? Well, we was doing that years ago, right? Because defense is about getting off blocks, tackling, and getting to the football and tackling.
And somehow, coach, other teams don't work on that stuff. Like, what's going on?
That I couldn't tell you.
It's evident, by the way, some people play defense.
So when you really look at it, Drake, I lost my thought. What was your question again? I want to finish your question.
What makes Iowa football?
I just want to know what makes Iowa's defense, because we got good recruits, but we've never had the greatest.
I'm gonna tell you the difference in there's a few things that make the way we play defense special. But I think here's the secret sauce. So you're looking at a defensive coordinator, right, who was the defensive back coach 1999. And obviously he's moved on to be the DC, and he still is defensive coordinator, and he have the corners and both safeties in the room, which I will tell you, not a lot of people have it today. They have a corners coach and they have a safeties coach, right? Mm-hmm. So just to keep that in perspective, when you think about guys being multiple, being athletic enough to Cooper DeGene start off as the cash, and then play the safety, then play the corner, was a lot easier when all the guys in the room. Okay, so you have Phil Parker, who's going on 25 years at Iowa. Then let's go to Seth Wallace, GA for who? Norm Parker, right? GA for Norm Parker, went on to do some great things at Valdosta State. Came back in a recruiting role, came back as an assistant. Next thing you know, he's coaching the linebackers. So he have a lot of history there. You don't think he learned a ton of stuff from Norm Parker, who he was a GA for? I mean, that's priceless. Kelvin Bell, right? Kelvin Bell came to Iowa, Olive Branch, Mississippi, came back as a GA, came back in a recruiting role, worked his way through the program, and then end up being a D-line. So when you look at those guys over there, when you look at Coach Jay Neiman, who two of his sons played at Iowa, when you look at Tyler Parker, right, when you look at Shane, when you look at those guys, man, I mean, you cut them dudes are black and gold, right? So you have
a lot of dudes who've been around for a long time.
Yeah, and what I tell people, Kevin, is history matters, man. Mm. When you're trying to solve problems, you can dive. When you can dive 20 years – well, you got 20 years worth of information, 25 plus years of information. That's valuable. I remember hearing a story about when we was playing Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl, and how Coach Parker, Norm Parker at the time, was like looking through his old notes to see his old game plan versus a very similar offense.
I heard that story before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they go out and find a play that they ran. And they ended up running that play in the game, didn't they?
He goes out, he finds his notes, he's like, I got it. I got it.
That's a movie scene.
That's a movie scene. And then look at the results of that game.
Yeah.
If he didn't have that information, if he didn't have that experience, that history of defending that type of offense, maybe it would have been a little different ball game. Who knows, right? So when you know thy opponent, you guys know this, man, right? We know that, like, if you grew up in the Big Ten, you grew up at Iowa, you know the story of these other programs that you're competing against week in and week out in the Big Ten, right? You remember those things. So you can see where these staffs have came from. You can see, you know, the DNA in these programs. But to answer your question, it's the people in the room. You know, X and O's are great. The structure is the same. The pitchers are the same. But, man, those guys over there on defense, they have been together for a very long time. And now I will say this, offensively, what have you seen now? You've seen, you know, guys like myself have came back that know the history of the program. You've seen guys like Ladell Betts that's going on his third year coaching those running backs. You've seen Brian Ferentz have been in the program. So now my point is, around college football, the more stability you can have, the more consistency you can have, it makes it a lot easier. And then it's about building relationships, right, within the people that you're working with, you know, understanding, you know, what guys' strengths are, understanding, you know, what resources guys need to be successful. So, you know, hopefully we can continue to create that on the offense side of the ball. But if you ask me a question defensively, that's a huge advantage.
You brought up a couple of the guys' names, you know, Coach Brian, Liddell, KB. What were they putting in the water 20 years ago that you guys all wanted to be coaches now? Because it seems like half that 2002 class is on the coaching staff right now. I mean, you also got LeVar. What's it like coaching with a bunch of dudes that you played with or played with around your era?
Man, it's amazing, Kevin. I tell people, man, I'm very blessed to be not only doing what you love doing, but doing it at Iowa. I mean, not a lot of people get to say they can go back to the place they played, the place they went to school, the place their alma mater, and teach football and coach football and mentor the next generation of student athletes that's coming through the University of Iowa. It's funny because when I got done playing, if you told me I'd have been coaching, I'd have told you crazy. You know, I really wasn't interested in coaching. I knew I love football. But you guys know, man, when you get done with the game, it's like a death, like someone died in a family.
Back. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, you have to go through that first 2, 3, 4 years of withdrawal. You can't really turn a television on because we all feel like we still should be out there playing.
100%.
Right? So you kind of go through that process. And for me, I'm married. I have my wife I met in high school, my daughter, and I have a son. So when I got done playing, I made it about them, right? Where my wife wanted to go back to school. My daughter was in middle school, going to high school, and my son was in elementary school. So I really just wanted to support them and be there for them. And then one day, this high school coach called me, Jonathan Williams. And he like, Abdul, won't you come out here and help me volunteer and just help me?
Were you back down in Florida?
I was in South Florida. Yeah. So so once I got done, I moved back. I had a place in Florida. So I moved back and we was living there. So I'm in South Florida and I see his text message. I'm like, I really don't want to coach because I understand the time that it's going to take. But he was a great mentor of mine back in Bort Addison. So let me just go out here and see what it's about. To make a long story short, I'm like, I can come out here and help you, but it's only going to be for like a day, maybe 2 days. Obviously I'm trying to do some entrepreneur stuff on the side and I'm spending time with my family. And then one day, this kid named PJ, was a Haitian kid, he played linebacker. And it was maybe a Wednesday practice and I was not there. And PJ was like, hey, Coach Harris, man, where were you at yesterday? I'm like, man, only come out here 1 or 2 days. And these were his exact words. And he was like, Coach, I needed you, right? I'm like, oh, man, like, here's a kid that
– that cuts deep, man.
Better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting back like, I'm only going to go out there 1 or 2 days and volunteer. But when he said that, man, it kind of just struck a nerve with me. It did something to me. I felt like I was cheating a game of football because I felt like I've been part of this in this space for a very long time since I was 8 years old. I've been around a lot of great teachers and mentors, and I'm sitting at home hoarding information, hoarding stories and experiences. So after that, man, I kind of dove into it a little bit. I fell in love with it. And then I did it for one more year where I coached high school football. And then going back to 2016, Drake, when we came back as an honorary captain, my daughter was like, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. Daddy is happy, right? So she's obviously kids know.
Mm.
And when they could keep, they sense your energy. They can understand your vibe, right? So when she said that, she's like, "Daddy's happy. Daddy's happy." I just realized that I am happy. Like when and part of it was being back in Iowa, but a lot of it was being back in that football environment, talking ball, going to the game. Like that was like just being around a bunch of guys, coaches and players that love the game of football. So 2 weeks after, I called Coach Ferris and I say, "Coach," he was the first guy I called, and I said, "I think what do you think about me coaching? Like, I think I want to learn a little bit more about turning this in profession, coaching full time at the collegiate level. And what are your thoughts?" And it kind of went from there, and that kind of got the ball rolling.
It's weird. It's crazy how many similarities there are between your story and Coach Betts' story.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Like, he started off just coaching a little high school ball, and then he's like, gets a call. He calls KF up, and then like 3 weeks later, there's a position opening for him.
Yeah. Coach, the story about you coming back in 16 and your daughter recognizing that you were like a different level of happy. That like I'm like sitting here damn near in tears. I just had a daughter, so it hits a little closer to home. And she, even at 6 months old, she can sense energy. It is crazy. And so that's crazy. Was that emotional for you? I mean, obviously you were very clearly aware.
To ask your question, yeah, because you know, you're sitting here, you're going through life, you're because, you know, you have to take those few years to understand who you are outside of the game of football, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's important. So as you go through that, you go through your withdrawal from the game, you know, it's not fun to feel like you the last time you played a game, the reason why you're not playing because you wasn't wanted, you know? Yeah. That's the reality, right?
Sucks, yeah. Right?
Time is up. We don't want you anymore, right? So you go through that. But what I would say is she probably felt that for me internally, I wasn't fulfilled. So even if I was doing things to stay busy, entrepreneur-wise, whatever, I wasn't fulfilled. And when I got back in that environment, I started to feel more fulfillment. And I would say now going into my fifth year coaching full-time, on the college level, oh man, I'm having a blast. I'm fulfilled. There's not one day that I have not went to the office and felt like I got to come in today. Like it's crazy. And then also obviously doing it with guys like Brian Ferentz, who that was your classmate in 2001 and graduated December 2005, you know, doing it with guys like LeVar Woods. LeVar and I did not play together, but it's like us on this call, even though we didn't play together, man, if we went out for a beer, we would just have conversation. You feel like you just know each other.
There's a shared experience right there. Like, yeah, I didn't play spending locker room time with you. It was position room, but it's like, you know, there's
100%.
You know each other at the same time.
You've been hearing stories about this dude, you know what I'm saying, on the legal shoulder pads and that neck brace number 97. You know, and that's all Coach Norm Parker talked about with LeVar Woods. So you always looked up to a guy like that. So to be coaching with him, it's crazy. Kelvin Bell, Liddell, you know, guys like Liddell Betts, Phil Parker, you know, the guy that, you know, you looked up to as when you was a student athlete and a player. I mean, it's crazy, you know. So we got five guys on our out of our 10 assistants that played at Iowa and played for the same head coach. You know,
is this about to be the blueprint going forward? Like, it's very clear that it's worked at Iowa for a while. And like, our program just going to stop hiring like these old white guys and just start hiring their former players just everywhere? Like, how much better does it get if a former running back's running your running back room, a former offensive lineman's running your old line room, quarterback, everything? Like, how much better does it get?
Same head coach, right? Because you know what the kids are going through. You know how the program's structured, how you went through it as a student athlete. And
you're right, and it's a strong story, man. And you guys know when you know that guys have, when you're teaching guys and you're mentoring kids, when they know you have sat in those similar seats to them and have went through the very similar experiences, that they're going through, you can connect with them on a different level. Mm. You know,
and it gets the kids' attention too, right? You know,
and you have a deeper level of passion for your occupation. Like all coaches have a deep love for the game, obviously, but when you're coaching for your own university, it's even that much deeper.
It is that much deeper. And I tell people, man, like, you're going to get everything out of me, you know, when as a coach. But at Iowa, you may get a little bit. Man, maybe instead of 100%, it may get a 1 point.
You may be able to squeeze a couple more drops out, huh?
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's for us to say it's not, it's a little different. The other thing I would tell you is, I'm going to be honest with you, that also comes with some pressures, right?
Of course. So
yeah.
When you hire a former linebacker to coach offense at Iowa and coach the tight ends and the fullbacks, like, that may seem glorious, that may seem cookie, like a seamless process, but man, you have to deliver because everyone's watching.
You're the head of tight end, you.
That's I don't know true. Right now, you are currently the head coach.
I don't know if I'm the head, but I will say it's a big role, you know. But you know how it is, man. This is something that you wake up every day willing to compete. You wake up every day with a little thing. With some anxiety, you wake up every day with some nervousness. You wake up, but that is what drives you. That's what challenges you. That's what forces you to be at your best because you're not comfortable, right? So when Coach Ferentz, you know, when I saw the opportunity opened up for me to get back at Iowa and it was coaching tight ends, I'm like, when can I start, right? But then you hang the phone up, you're like, oh shit, here we go.
yep
right, there's a ton of unknowns, right? But going back right to when I played at Iowa, and what did I say? I felt great that Chad Greenway was to left or right of me. You know, Matt Roth was in front, you know, Grant Steen was the Leo, Jonathan Babineau was the three technique, you know, Bob Sanders was a strong safety, Considine was a free safety, Antoine Allen played corner. Jovan Johnson played corner. Brad Banks was leading the offense, right? So I felt comfortable knowing that Brian Ferentz not only was my classmate, he was a really great coach and teacher, and he coached the tight ends, and he was leading our offense. Ladell Best was in the room, right? Coach Ferentz, right, was in the room. LeVar Woods, who have coached that position, you know, was on staff. So you feel like we're only as great as the people that we have around us. And when you have great people and great coaches around you, you know, you feel comfortable, not feel comfortable going out and taking risks. Cause you know that, guess what, man, you know, when the shit hit the fan, these are the guys that you can go close the door and have a conversation with because they've experienced some of the same things you have experienced. Like LeVar has coached linebackers and got, you know, had the opportunity to coach the tight ends and then now special teams, you know.
Coached a couple of real damn good tight ends too.
Real good tight ends. Yeah. So it's kind of like when you know, coming out of high school, I'm looking at Iowa, I'm like, man, I know it's cold up there, but if Benny Sapp went through it, And he loves Iowa, then maybe I got a shot to do the same thing, right? So when you see guys that you know have had success in that same path, like LeVar Woods, who, you know, when I got into coaching, when I was at the previous institution, man, LeVar Woods and Kelvin Bell and Seth Wallace was on speed dial. I had to connect with those guys on a consistent basis to hit the ground running. Because those guys have been very, very successful, and those guys I look up to this day.
That's awesome. Tell me about this this tight end room right now. Luke Lachey, Eric All got a transfer. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like I said, it's tight end you right now. Kittle, Hawkinson, Fant,
and then after that, tell me about our fullback because I'm Porta. Always interested.
Yeah, all the guys underneath you. Tell what do we got right now? We got some dogs in there.
I think we got a great group of guys. You know, I think we do. I think we got guys who are learners, right? Dudes are extremely and smart, intelligent, and are willing to learn. Guys that's willing to compete. Guys that's willing to compete with each other, but still put their hand around each other and be like, man, I love you, but I'm going to still compete with you. right?
Yeah.
I think we got a great group of guys that selfless, high character guys, guys that want to be at Iowa. Right? I always tell people, you got to want to be at Iowa. You got to be.
Yeah. That's super right. underrated. I really think so. It's not, this isn't Columbus. This, you know, this isn't Tuscaloosa, right? Like this.
This ain't South Beach.
And like KF says, man, college football is hard. If you don't want to be here, like, what are you doing here? Cause it's a lot. Yeah, it's work.
Which is what I think the transfer portal has actually, in a good way, that exposes that out of kids. Like, okay, if they don't want it, good. Like, we will find guys who do.
100%. So you got to want to be at Iowa. So when you look at that tight end room, and I'll just say this, like, the reason why that room, and I'm not an expert in Iowa history, like Iowa tight ends or the history of Iowa, but in short period of studying and being around, like I played with Dallas Clark. Like, I played with Tony Jackson, Tony Moaki, Brandon Meyer, Scott Chandler. Like, I played with those guys, and I knew what those guys brought to the table. I knew what made those guys successful on and off the field, right? And then you fast forward, and you see the George Kittle, the Noah Fonts, the TJ Hockenson. You look at those guys, and it's really the transfer of information, man, from one generation to the next. It's the teaching tapes. It's the brotherhood. And it's the standard. So when guys come to Iowa, when guys walk in that room and they look on that wall and they see guys that came before them, man, they take pride in that. They take pride in that. They take pride in their work. They know they're not just coming to a university and just going on a football field, just checking boxes. Like, these dudes know they're carrying that torch to the next generation. So Sam Laporta was a guy that was in the room last year. Matter of fact, he's still in the room. He might be in Detroit, but he's still in the room because he left us a ton of information and a lot of great pictures and a lot of great teaching clips on how to do things right on and off the field. But coming in my first year, you know, you get Sam Laporta, you get Luke Lachey coming out the gate. I mean, that to me, there's no better room in the country that you can walk into as a first year tight end coach. Coaching from going from the defense side of the ball to the offense side of the ball, because them dudes is legit. The other thing, what I'll say is, taking over a room after the offensive coordinator was in there prior also raises the standard of how you teach the offense, right? Sure. So it's not like you're.
Well, hold on, coach.
Say it again.
I thought Brian Ferentz was an idiot. Am I mistaken? Is Brian not an idiot?
Nah, man.
I've been fooled otherwise. That's what I've been told.
Here's why I'll tell you. Brian has been one of the single most important guys for my success development-wise offensively since I've gotten here. The other thing I'll tell you is when I gotten into that room, you can tell when you take over a room that the previous coach didn't know what he was talking about. Like, them guys, when you look at Sam Laporta, when you look at Luke, like, Sam knew protections, 60s, 50s, 79, 278s, 89. Like,
whoa, coach, you're going to hit the public with stuff that they don't know that they're talking about, getting over their head, but that, you know, they know.
Like, he knew so much of the game of football. I'm talking about like on a coordinator level, in terms of the run game, where the butt point, the hots, the sights. Like, you can tell when a room have gotten developed and taught by a really great coach. So when I got into that room, them guys was at a whole nother level, right? So it helped me. Because I use them to help me learn the position. But on the flip side, in the background, I got a lot of questions for Brian on a consistent basis, getting the necessary information that I need to coach those guys up. And I would say that it's been a great experience, man. You know,
phenomenal.
And I love him. But to ask your question, the room is a great room, man. We got a great group of young guys that's coming through the pipeline that understands that standard. And we got, you know, Luke Lachey, Eric All, Addison Estringa, Steve Stylianos. He's a guy that transferred in that I think he's our most improved guy from the fall to the spring that's going to help us this year and provide depth. You know, we've got some true freshmen that's coming in that I think is going to push, you know, guys like Zach Oltworth, guys like Grant Leeper. I think, you know, we got guys that's going to step up and do some things for us. You know, I think Jalen Thompson, you know, that's on campus from Dowling Catholic. I will keep eyes on him. He reminds me of Jeremy Allen. Remember Jeremy Allen, number 47, fullback?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That guy that helped us on special teams and could do some things. So I think we got a great group of guys that not only going to help us on offense, but going to help us on special teams as well, too. You know, so when you really look at that room, it's a bunch of guys that that's competing against each other, guys that are learners and guys that are really good football players, guys that want to run and hit and be physical and do the selfish things and play special teams and run out on kickoff and play on punt return. And if you get 10 snaps, get your ass in there and give us 100% for 10 snaps. If you get more, you get more. But don't be on the sideline complaining. You know, just when your number is called, you go out and you execute and you take advantage of your opportunity. I think we got a lot of those guys.
You're hyping me up, Coach. I'm about to go in my storage room here and grab my helmet. I got my helmet ready to go still.
I love to hear it. So I want to know, now that you've got your own position group, What are some of the points that you stress? Like, if I go into a Coach Hodge meeting, what is like his mantras? What is something I'm going to hear like at least five times every time I go into a Coach Hodge meeting?
Man, I think when you look at, I would say this, to me, this is me. I think anyone in that room have to have the ability to run and have to have the ability to be physical. Iowa football. Right, whether you're a linebacker or whether you're a tight end, can you run and can you be physical? Now, most of these guys are great athletes. They played basketball, they played baseball, you know, they ran track. So they have finesse, natural movement. They can naturally catch the football. But to me, what separates guys in that room is the ability to put their hand in the dirt and move guys. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm talking about blocking, right? Having the ability to block. And having the wanting to go handle their business in a run game, because we cannot be a successful football team unless we can run the football effectively. And when we run the football effectively, it opens everything else up, right? So you got the center, two guards, and two tackles. That's five guys on the offensive line. But now we got the tight ends that's attaching to the box, right? Whether we're in 11 or 12 personnel. So we have to hold our own in terms of blocking. And then when your number is calling a passing game, understand leverage, understand space, understand our concepts and what we're trying to get accomplished, and to be effective in the passing game. And when you look at it, whether it's the tight ends, the safeties, the corners, the linebackers, you better, if you're not playing, you better be able to get your butt on some of these special teams as well, too, because we got to win the offensive battles. We got to win it on special teams, and we got to win it on defense. You know,
I love it, man.
Talk about they want to be. Everyone wants to play it. Who wants to go in the NFL? I want to play in the NFL. Okay, well, did you know there's 53 guys on the NFL roster? There's about 45, 46 guys that dress. There's 22 starters, maybe three or four specialists. So what do you think the other guys are doing? Oh, yeah, they're playing special teams. So you better develop that skill set here and get your butt on the field. And then if you inspire to play at that next level, well, a lot of our guys do because they can hold over and play special teams to add value. So you kind of just have to get guys in there with that mind mentality to be selfless. And here's the thing, man, not everybody's going to play, but you can carve out a role. Some guys' role is going to be you're going to get our guys ready. You're going to go over there on scout team and give our guys a look. Give our guys a look defensively to get ready on Saturday. Some guys is going to be special teams. Some guys is going to be certain packages. Maybe you're only playing in a 13 personnel package on short yardage. Maybe you're only playing special teams. Or maybe you're just a guy that's sitting back, just getting a ton of mental reps and learning the game from that perspective. But those things count as well, too. So when you look at it, man, I think we got a great group of guys that want to be that want to work hard, that want to be coached hard, that want to be pushed. And when you come down to it, to answer you, it comes down to the details. The little things still matter, like your eyes and hand placement and your first step and your leverage. Like, those things still matter. And if you ask me in terms of what that in a tight end and fullback room, guys are going to understand that how those little things make a big difference. Guys are going to understand that, okay, well, I only can be one person, right? What do I mean by that? I cannot be missing academic appointments. I cannot be late to lifts and expect to be on time in a passing game, right?
That's a coach Parker thing right there. It all ties in together.
You could only be one person. And I tell guys, listen, man, we're not going to wait for you to screw us on Saturday or for you to miss a block or for you to not, you know, have your proper depth in the passing game or whatever the technicalities or the fundamentals may be. We're going to understand who you are before you step on that field. And that's how it's always been. Mm-hmm. Like, the standard that guys like Norm Parker, guys like Carl Jackson, guys like Ron Aiken set early on is putting a bunch of guys on the field who are detail-oriented, did the little things right, and guys that loved the game, guys that were selfless, and then we see what the results are. And fortunately for us, throughout the years, it's overall, it's been really good. You know, we've developed a lot of guys. We've had a lot of great seasons, and hopefully we can continue to put our head down and work to have a great season coming up.
Awesome answer,
Coach. We gotta let G Bone get a question.
Yeah, this is our intern here, G Bone. Any questions before we wrap this up?
What's going on, Coach? Thanks for joining us today. My question for you would be: so, outside of NIL, what is something that players today have access to or do in the Iowa program that you wish was a part of your Iowa career?
It's got to be food.
Outside of the NIL, man, I'm gonna tell you, like, I remember living off campus and taking $5 to McDonald's and getting the McChickens for lunch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, now the ability to just, like, deregulate food and to provide meals for our guys is awesome.
How incredible is it?
On top of that, I would add having the ability to practice in the morning and be a morning operation where guys could come in 5:30, 6 o'clock, whatever, in the morning before, 6:15 special teams meeting and get refueled and then go into meetings and then go to practice and then leave practice and get a brunch. Like, those are two meals before you even started your day. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a game changer. And I tell parents that, like, instead of your son waking up eating Cheerios or Fruit Loops late trying to get to class at 8 a.m., right, we bring them in the morning, we give them the refuel, they go to meetings. Like, we're getting them when they're sharp, they're ready. They get off the practice field, they shower, and they go upstairs in the All-American room, and they have a meal. So you're getting two meals before you even start your day, before you even go to class. To me, that's a game changer.
You're making me miss it.
I think when they changed from the afternoon to the morning schedule, that did that our third year, mm-hmm. was the single biggest contributor to us having better practices.
Yeah. Oh, it's a game changer.
On a consistent basis. I just remember those first 2 years, you showing up to practice. It's the end of the day, right?
Dragging ass, 4:30, man.
5 o'clock. It's hot out. It's like, I'm already spent. You know, we lifted 5 a.m. this morning. Yep. I'm already spent just walking out to this practice versus, you know, you're never really fresh, but you got energy in the morning. So that was huge for the Iowa football program.
Debo?
I'm not wasting time thinking about, man, I got this test at noon and I got practice at 3. And how that just, like, sticks in your head and gives you anxiety. Wake up in the morning, get a refuel, knock it out. Knock meetings and practice out and start your day.
Yep. Same mistake. All right, I'm sorry, I gotta do it to you. Give me your Mount Rushmore of Iowa linebackers.
Mount Rushmore, Iowa linebackers. Let's see. Top, how many guys?
There's four guys on Mount Rushmore. I need four names.
And then let us know why. Josie
not three, not five. I need four.
Do I have to play with them? Can it be guys?
No. Kirk in KF's tenure.
Okay, Coach Ferentz. I'm gonna be honest. Okay. Prior to this year, I thought the best overall guy that played for Coach Ferentz was Josie Jewell.
Oh God, that's not what we wanted to hear. Hate that guy.
But, I said, tell us why he's not on the list.
You're a butt coming.
No, we love him. He's our best friend.
So then there was Jack Campbell. So I'm going to put Jack Campbell number one.
Oh, Josie.
Suck it, Josie.
Number one. And it's probably not fair to Josie because I thought he's the most complete linebacker. I'm talking about in the running game, the passing game, physical play,
wow.
Leader. Run sideline to sideline, but it hits a little different when you're doing it at 6'5", 240, right? And I had a chance to see Jack prepare for this season when he was doing his conditioning with against receivers and cornerbacks and safety, and was actually like up in front. Like I saw the work that guy put in. Not taking anything from Jewell. Love Jewell. Think he's a great player. And then I would say Josie. So I'll say Jack Campbell, Josie Jewell, Chad Greenway. And then I'm going to say I think Christian Kirksey was a dude.
That was my fourth.
I love right that too. One. That's a great pick.
Kirks is good.
I think we have not had that type of guy playing that position since. I think he – changed the way, like, that position was usually, you know, a bigger guy that can, like, you know, blow things up and spill the ball and set edges. And then he just brought
up. He was a freak. He also ran with the skill group when it was his senior year.
You can make the argument that he was kind of the transition to, you know, several years later, we end up going to the cash.
He brought the absolute boom, too. Dude hit people hard.
100%, and I heard he's a great person. I met him a few times. LeVar Woods, I obviously loved the heck out of him and talked really highly of him. So you got four guys there, man, that I think are the real deal. Teammates love playing with them. Teammates love being in the locker room with them. And them guys just go out and play the game the right way. Fast, physical, dudes were smart. They had toughness, and there was great locker room guys doing it together with their teammates.
Coach, incredible answer. People are going to love this one. We appreciate your time so much. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, this has been phenomenal, Coach. Thank you a ton.
Anytime you guys want me on, man, just let me know, man.
Hell yeah. We'll do a little recap of this season and have you on again next year for sure.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys.
Thank absolutely. You. Everybody listening.
We're looking forward to watching y'all win the Big Ten.
Hey, yeah, man. Facts.
We're putting in the work right now, baby.
We'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.
All right.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.